I'm Veronica Marshall at the Capitol. This week on Senate Spotlight, the state's latest financial budget forecast is out, and our financial outlook hasn't improved.
If federal action meant that we would lose those resources, the impact to the state budget could really be devastating.
While legislators still have time to balance the budget, experts say not everything is within their control. And senators tell us how they hope to avoid a deficit while also avoiding cuts to state services Minnesotans rely on.
We should be better stewards of our taxpayers' funds.
One, let's keep doing what we've been doing right. Two, when there are things we see problems, let's address them right away.
Plus, it was a rough day at the Capitol, but these paws were here to promote a cause. That's all coming up.
Senate Spotlight is produced by the Minnesota Senate and Senate Media Services.
Minnesota Management and Budget's latest financial forecast for the state is out. It shows the gap between Minnesota's revenues and expenses is growing, and that's only part of the problem.
The projected balance at the end of FY26-27 is now $456 million, which is $160 million less than our previous estimates. This means we will have less money to carry over into fiscal years 28-29, where we continue to forecast a deficit now totaling just under $6 billion.
In addition to the state's structural imbalance, factors outside Minnesota's borders are also impacting its budget projections.
Health and Human Services spending has grown from previous estimates and is growing quickly over time, driven largely by our medical assistance program, the state's Medicaid program. But it's important to keep in mind that for every dollar the state spends, the federal government is spending even more, because they pay for roughly 56% of state medical assistance spending. The federal government is projected to provide $26 billion to medical assistance in the 26-27 biennium. And this underscores how sensitive our budget is to changes in federal funding. Because MA is a state entitlement program, reductions in federal funding will result in increased costs to the state budget.
The state will be required to pay any portion of Medicaid costs that the federal government does not. This is true for many other entitlement programs outside of Medicaid as well. If the federal government makes significant reductions in Medicaid, it could result in a dramatic hole in the state's budget. If that happens, Minnesota policymakers would be faced with very difficult choices.
One of the policymakers tasked with making those difficult decisions is DFL Senator John Marty, chair of the Senate Finance Committee. Senator, thank you for being here.
My pleasure.
Now, Senator, MMB just released that updated budget forecast. What were your main takeaways?
Sure. Well, the good news is that the budget we have, including for the biennium we're setting the budget for right now, has enough money to cover everything. The bad news is, yes, as the out biennium, the numbers we first saw in November shows that we have a budget issue we did have to address. And that's something we can address now. Minnesota is one of a handful of states that forecasts not just 2 years out, but actually looks 4 years out. And we try and address the four-year trends so that we, when we put together a budget 2 years ago, we addressed the 4 years out so we'd have enough money to cover things in the next 4 years. Now we have to do that for the next 4 years, and I think that's very important. It's not good news. I mean, we're not on a sustainable thing right now, but I think it's a one that's very doable on its own. The trouble is there's so many outside factors that we can't address, largely federal.
Senator, have we faced a structural imbalance like this before? And if so, like, how did we counter that?
Sure. Well, first of all, structural imbalance, which means we're taking in less money in a biennium than we're spending, happens a lot of times. We had intentionally done that 2 years ago. If you have a surplus in the bank, and we had a lot of extra money in the bank 2 years ago, if you want to ever spend that, you're going to have a structural imbalance, because if you take in as much as you're putting out, you keep carrying that money over and over. So it gives an opportunity to do a lot of one-time spending, which makes a structural imbalance. And we set it up in such a way that we had money left over for the next two-year cycle to help cover that and so on. So we're slowly slowing down the imbalance in there, and it was the direction it was going. The economy now, the projections are 4 years out, the trend is not the right direction, so we have to change that. But it's a lot easier to change it now than to wait till the last minute and try and do it.
Yeah, so talk to me about that. You know, we've heard that there's a deficit on the horizon. Is it avoidable, or can we do work now to at least soften that?
Right, well, we have to address it at two years from now, we have to address it if there's the problem that is there. Right now, what we can do is to help minimize it, make sure we're on a course that will correct that. And that's what we're trying to put together. That's a very challenging one in the political climate we're in, but we're planning to do that. We're trying to do that and finish the session in May when we're supposed to.
Senator, you mentioned that we can do things to minimize that. And, you know, some people have heard that, you know, special education and long-term care services, they're singled out as being those drivers behind that structural imbalance. And there are concerns that there may be cuts to those programs. You know, what do you say to people who have fear around that?
Right. I very much share their fear. When it's easy to talk in budgeting circles, oh, these are numbers, we can cut this here and do this there and so on. It's very impersonal. But when you have people with severe disabilities, you have students with special education needs, you have growing number of people in long-term care because of aging population, a lot of those are trends we've known about for the last 10, 20 years, but that's growing, and it's definitely a big part of the budget and going to be a bigger part. So when people say, oh, we can just cut money here, we'll change that, you got to realize there are real people's lives behind there. So I strongly share their concern and want to make sure that we're not doing deep cuts into the areas where people need more help, not less.
Senator, you mentioned some unknowns going into these planning years, and one word we've heard a lot is recession, at least on the federal level. You know, so if the country were to face a recession, how would that impact us here?
Sure. Well, first of all, there are a couple of things. When I say that I think we could balance the budget problem we have here, what we have to look at is what's happening around us. And at the federal level, I mean, I think some would call it economic chaos. When you lay off perhaps hundreds of thousands of federal employees, it's not just a crisis for those families who have to pay the mortgage and everything else. It's a crisis for the overall economy when there are lots of people who are being hit that way. And most federal employees aren't in Washington, D.C. They're in Minnesota and the other states. So that'll have an impact. The tariffs, the uncertainty is hard on businesses, but the tariffs are likely to cause inflation and slow down the economy at the same time. How much and which tariffs, well, that changes week to week. So it throws chaos into business planning and investment stuff. And on top of that, some of the decisions in terms of expelling many immigrants from the country, we don't know which ones and how and what way, but if they really were to try not expelling 12 million undocumented people, but say 1 million people, that would have a huge impact on our agriculture sector, the people who work in the fields. It would have a huge impact in our nursing homes and long-term care facilities. It has huge impacts in parts of the economy. So all of those changes could throw one of them. I mean, economists can tell you what tariffs will do, but they don't know which tariffs are going to happen, how long they're going to last, what retaliation there is. But they can project that it's going to make inflation go higher and slow down the economy and lead towards recessionary type of things. You put all those combinations together, and we don't know. I mean, I'm worried that recession is not the worst we could have. That we could have much, much worse than that, and we don't have experience in our lifetimes of that. So that would be new. And if that happens, if the federal government does that, and also if they cut, this is a long answer, but the other half of it is what they might do to budgets. If they cut housing funds, where we have a housing crisis right now, if they cut Medicaid, that would be a huge thing. It could multiply our problems. So all those things together, they won't throw Minnesota state budget into chaos. They'll throw 50 state budgets into chaos and could send the economy into a tailspin. So I'm saying whatever we do this spring and putting together a budget, I'm worried we may be coming back this fall to address federal problems that put the economy in big shape, big trouble.
You said there are all these unknowns that are causing potential chaos and that these decisions touch real lives. You know, how does it feel to be taking on this gigantic responsibility?
It's a lot of challenge here, and I mean, it can be very stressful, but the good news is I don't do it on my own. Nobody here does it on their own. We work together. It's clearly gonna be a bipartisan process, and there are people with very strong feeling and strong opinions, so it will be challenging, but again, that's our job, is to try and bring it all together and come up with a budget.
That's right, the different voices are a strength.
Right.
How confident are you that the Senate can pass a budget before the end of the session?
I'm very hopeful we'll pass the budget before the end of this. We basically have to pass a budget before July 1st, or you have government shutdown. We can do it. I want to avoid a special session. I want to make sure we get it done on time. Last 2 years ago was the first budget year where we didn't go into overtime in the last couple decades, I think. And I want to replicate that again. I feel we did good last time. I hope we can do the same here. But am I certain it's going to happen? No, there's too many uncertainties in this process. But I think I'm committed to it, and I think a lot of others are committed to it as well.
Where is your team in the process now?
Where are we right now? We're putting together what we call budget targets, which would allocate how much money goes into transportation, how much to education, to human services, to healthcare, all those things. We're trying to allocate what combinations of things we're going to do for revenue, for budget cuts, for everything else, and trying to figure how to make it so we're on a curve to make sure the budget is stable on the way out. Again, that's outside of all the federal pressures, though. So anything we do, no matter how careful we do, federal government's powers dwarf us. And just one thing, with our budget for the next 2 years out, it's $6 billion in total numbers, but that counts inflation, which we're not going to cut things so that we can inflate them later. We're going to figure it out. So basically, we have a $2.4 billion problem over the next 4 years to balance. But Medicaid, the federal government provides, of our 65, 67, somewhere in there, $1 billion biennial budget, they provide over a two-year period, just in Medicaid, about $17 billion. And if they take away even 10% of that, they're doubling our problem. I mean, this is a four-year problem, so they're more than doubling our problem. And if they take away bigger chunks, which they're talking about, massive cuts in Medicaid, that alone would do it. Put on top of that what they might do to education and everything else. And that's why I say we could have a huge, huge problem that even if we fix it now, we could be looking at it again this fall.
Federal aside, you know, what can we learn from our current situation here in Minnesota that we can use going forward?
Sure. Among other things is keep doing the things we've been doing right. I mean, looking, the idea that we're only going to look 2 years out, which most states do, not 4 years out. I think that's important. We kept a strong budget reserve. We kept a balanced budget. We got AAA bond rating from all the bond houses, which is the best rating you can get, suggesting that they think we've been responsible in our budget, and we want to keep that up. So I think thing I'd like to have us say is, one, let's keep doing what we've been doing right. Two, when there are things we see problems, let's address them right away instead of waiting till later.
Senator, any final thoughts on this?
I'm looking forward to we've got a lot of tough discussions ahead in the next couple months, and we're hoping we can make it happen.
Senator, thank you so much for your time.
My pleasure.
There's a new bill that aims to keep the state from taking on too much debt. Authors say Senate File 853 revises the state's current debt limit. If passed, the Republican-backed bill would require MMB to delay the sale of bonds for debt that goes above the state's debt limit, if that debt was authorized by legislation after a budget forecast showed it would exceed those debt limits. The bill has been referred to the Senate's Finance Committee, but has not yet been heard.
So, if you're looking for a man in finance to help make sense of the state's current and future forecasts, look no further. We're now joined by Senate File 853's chief author and ranking minority leader of the Senate's Finance Committee, Republican Senator Eric Pratt. Senator, thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Absolutely. So, Senator, talk me through your thoughts on where the state currently is with its financial situation.
So, what we've seen in the management and budget forecast reiterates what we saw in November, that we have basically spent the entire $18 billion surplus, and we are now faced with a $6 billion deficit. And I think that's going to be the legacy of the one-party control that we saw. Every one of our budget bills passed on essentially a party-line vote.
And I was going to ask, you know, was this avoidable considering we had this, you know, forecast in November, we have the one that came out just recently, and that gap actually widened. You know, was that avoidable?
I don't know if the widening was avoidable, but I think the situation we find ourselves in, it was. We essentially increased state spending by 40%, and we taxed Minnesotans, every Minnesota family, an extra $10 billion. And yet we went from what was a $6 billion structural surplus, meaning that the state was bringing in $6 billion more each biennium than we were spending. We're now at effectively a $5 billion structural deficit, which is just amazing because it goes beyond what we've heard the administration say are the key drivers of our structural deficit and of our looming budget deficit.
And Senator, you're part of the team who gets the first crack at balancing the state's budget. You know, what do you think needs to be kept at the forefront during those discussions?
You know, I think we have to be looking at what's important to Minnesota families and where can we pare back in some of the spending that we've already done. I think the second piece is looking at the number of state employee positions that we authorized but haven't filled yet. When I worked in the private sector, before we laid anybody off, we at least did a freeze on new hiring. And we authorized about 1,000 new state positions last biennium, last budget, and not all of those are filled. And so I think we should be looking at ways to bring that back. There are parts of paid family medical leave that we can make more efficient and less onerous on taxpayers by doing a public-private partnership, which was a bill that I sponsored and am sponsoring again this year.
Senator, during its latest budget forecast presentation, MB said there's a lot of uncertainty at the moment, particularly as it relates to the federal government. Mm-hmm. You know, talk me through some of those uncertainties that you guys are working with and the impact they could have on our budget.
There's uncertainties in every budget cycle. We had uncertainties when the Biden administration was increasing the federal deficit, and we saw inflation that crept up higher than we expected. There are uncertainties certainly with the tariffs and the stock market, and even today what we're seeing in consumer sentiment and retail sales. You know, our economy is in a interesting situation where we're getting some good news and some bad news. And I think, you know, what the Fed does as far as interest rates will have a lot to say about that. But that's out of our control. We've got to quit blaming Washington because this was a situation that we found out about in November, well before the new administration was in place. And so we need to take accountability for our own actions, and we need to address it here at the state.
How do you move forward given the unknowns, like at the federal level, but maybe there are some here at the state level too, right? So how do you factor that in?
You know, it's I think it's about being reasonable in what you're proposing. For instance, certainly we want to make sure that our schools have the resources they need. But was it responsible to increase state spending 40%? Was it responsible to hire or create 1,000 new state employee positions that would have an ongoing impact? And then if you look at the governor's proposed budget, is it responsible to shift nursing home care and some of the school pieces down to the counties? Doesn't change the cost to Minnesota families. It just means that they're going to be paying their taxes to somebody else. In Scott County, our commissioners have said that we'll see almost a one-to-one shift in property tax. And the Walz budget would be the largest property tax increase in state history.
Senator, when we hear about the imbalance and we hear, you know, we think to cuts immediately, mm-hmm. but are, you know, and you mentioned perhaps hiring freezes for unfilled mm-hmm. positions. Do we have other options on the table as far as balancing the budget or growing the economy?
You know, now that we've got the February forecast, we're looking at all of that. Where did we spend money on an ongoing basis that maybe we should pull back? Where do we have one-time funds that aren't spent yet? And maybe we should rethink some of those. And then again, the open positions, I think we need to take a look at. Those are three quick ones that I can think of. And I'm sure we'll come up with more as we work through the committee process and we continue to dive in to each agency's budget.
I also know that there was a big push from your caucus regarding finding out fraud, waste, and abuse, mm-hmm. right? That could be another opportunity to help with the balanced budget.
Yeah, the fraud and waste in particular is frustrating. It seems like a week doesn't go by when we don't hear about another case of fraud. We're up in excess of $600 million already in lost fraud. And I think what's even more frustrating is when we see the governor's agencies not even try to recover it. There was $40 million in Health and Human Services mispayments that statutorily they were supposed to go after, and they let the statute of limitations run out on it. We shouldn't be doing that. We should be better stewards of our taxpayers' funds.
Senator, we also know that Minnesota has a rainy day fund, mm-hmm. which is kind of like a financial safety net. But MMB said, you know, this does not qualify as a rainy day. We need to solve the structural imbalance another way. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I agree with MMB. You know, the rainy day fund is really there if we run into a cash flow problem. We put in a balanced budget and there's a shock to the system. Maybe tax collections come in much lower than we expect, or we see an increase in health care, or the number of students going through Minnesota schools that causes our budgets to rise beyond what we predicted. That's what the rainy day fund is for. This is planful. And the fact of the matter is we are already in a deficit. Just this budget cycle, we are expected to spend $3.3 billion more than we bring in. That's a $9 billion swing from what we saw just 2 years ago.
Senator, we know that the budget is such a huge topic and so many people are invested in following it in the process. So is there anything you want to say about it that I haven't asked you about yet?
You know, one of the things I said in the hearing was, you know, we hear some people say, well, we passed a responsible budget. See, we have a $3 billion surplus. And what I've been telling Minnesotans is that surplus is spent. It's already encumbered. Unless we make some changes today, we are going to spend $3.3 billion more than we bring in taxes. And that's not sustainable. And I really hope my Democrat friends will see the same urgency that I do, because it's going to take us working across the aisle to get this solved. And so, again, my hope is everybody comes together and works on it this year and not try to push it down as a problem for 2 years from now.
Senator, it's been a pleasure. Thank you for being here.
Appreciate it.
If you would like to watch MMB's full budget forecast presentation or see when MMB staff testified before the Senate's Finance Committee, you can watch those videos on our Senate Media YouTube channel at MN Senate Media.
Balancing the budget doesn't fall solely on the Senate Finance Committee's shoulders. Members of the Republican caucus say identifying government waste and recouping those misspent tax dollars could have a big impact on the state's budget, at least $600 million worth that could be used to support essential services.
One of the first things we identified is $21 million in funding sitting in a health care access fund yet to be passed for the public option. We would like to roll that back and earmark and free up that funding for this budget.
Other cost-saving ideas included canceling tuition assistance for undocumented students, sunsetting certain commissions and working groups, and preventing state grants from going to nonprofits where staff receive excessive compensation. Senators say they hope to find more line items for savings as the session continues. DFL Majority Leader Aaron Murphy responded in a statement saying, quote, "It is increasingly clear that Republicans see programs that help people as waste. Economic development, labor rights, support for farmers, Medicaid, and Social Security for children and seniors. Their budget priorities are tax breaks for corporations and the wealthy, paid for by everyone else. The DFL will fight for good-paying jobs, families and seniors, and the education and health care Minnesotans count on."
If you're one of the 1,556,000 Minnesotans who live in a homeowners association or a common interest community, a bill aimed at providing you with new protections is progressing through the Senate.
HOA and CIC reform will help Minnesotans achieve the American dream by assisting in housing stability, greater fairness, and increased opportunity.
Senate File 1750 is a bipartisan bill that aims to reform homeowners associations and common interest communities, also known as HOAs and CICs, by setting clear guidelines for their boards, such as how they meet and vote. Board conflict of interest, board fees and financing, and board decision reforms are also part of the reform package.
Everyone was afraid of getting hit with legal charges. We tried to file an attorney general complaint. When we did that, the board's attorney told us that we had hired an attorney. The board billed us $4,000 in their legal fees and told us they would foreclose on our home and take it if we did not pay those bills. And this was trying to defend against discrimination going on in our neighborhood.
HOAs wield enormous power right now under our current laws, setting rules, levying fines, and even initiating foreclosures. Yet they operate with very little oversight and often without the basic transparency we expect from any governing body.
The bill passed out of the Senate's Housing and Homelessness Committee and now heads to the Judiciary and Public Safety Committee for further debate. Senators were greeted with a traditional tribal song as part of this year's Sovereignty Day at the state capitol. Leaders from 11 federally recognized sovereign tribal nations within the boundaries of Minnesota attended the event. They provided input on legislation and educated legislators about tribal history, culture, and the relationship between tribal law and the state.
Sometimes sovereignty is about having agency to make reciprocal, honorable relationships.
It's important that we are engaged in this work together to nurture the government-government relationships our state has with each of our 11 sovereign tribal nations that share our borders.
It's not a one-size-fits-all. We see that so often out of St. Paul, and I think we're very much aligned where whether you're Republican or Democrat, whether you're rural or metro, whether you're dependent on different tribes, where you're from, there's different needs within that, and we have to recognize those differences and really work towards putting together bills and policies that reflect those differences across the states.
When we do things together that improve the lives of our tribal members, we are also investing in all of Minnesota.
Currently, there are 27 bills before the Senate relating to the tribes, ranging from recognizing Native veterans to modifying the state's prohibition on American Indian mascots and providing coverage for traditional health care practices via the state's medical assistance program.
This week, the Senate went to the dogs, at least for one day, as part of the Animal Humane Society's 8th annual Puppy Day at the Capitol.
Legislators took a lunchtime break to meet with some of their canine constituents. Animal Humane Society staff working the event say it gives them an opportunity to promote and show their support for current animal welfare bills, such as Senate File 1029, which asks the Board of Animal Health to publish its annual reports, inspection, and enforcement records for Minnesota breeders and kennels on its website.
That's all the time we have today. Thank you for joining us, and see you next time.